I can't believe y'all showed up. You really are alcoholic. Gorgeous day, been wintertime, sunshine. I said, where in the hell's the beach? On the other side of those trees. Hit it. Only for the people who knew. I had to go dress up, though. I was reading a little late. Dupree makes sure that I'm dressed properly. He says, you're in the South, not in Texas. Whatever the hell that means, I don't know. Well, he had a little trouble getting the right woman, too, you know. I started to say he ran through a few, but I think a few ran through him. Tried to get Janice to come get me. She said, one time's enough. Janice and Clay are sitting here, and they sent Sam. Sam didn't know where the airport was. No, Sam knew that the plane was supposed to get there at 5:30. Then he found out it was supposed to get there at 6. Well, you know when 6 is? 6:30. Love to be with Bob and Ruth. We've known each other, put up with each other for a while. You know, I guess we do put up with each other. You know why we do that? Nobody else will. Wasn't my choice, was it? I'm Jim Williams, I'm an alcoholic. Hi, I'd forgotten Ken. I enjoyed being. Is he here today? He's probably out. He's probably going back to California. Clancy said he wanted to know that he was going to stay through the prayer. God, you really got a good deal. I'm telling you, I don't know how y'all got this kind of deal going. That's something else. Ken last night, and then the preacher this morning got saved already, and hell, the thing's not over yet. I've never been saved that quick. I wasn't even ready for it. He did throw me a little bit when he said he didn't look at the women. But I may catch on to his part later. I haven't been here. God, the women here are just gorgeous. Some I've seen before and got prettier. God. Sorry, Ray. What AA did for me, let me see the beauty. Of course, it wasn't in cats. It'd been better if it had been cats. I thought, damn, if I had just loved cats, I wouldn't have gotten so much trouble. Well, I missed it. I was just raising the wrong part of the country. If it had been New York, I could have got into the cat deal. Good time, though, isn't it? Isn't it good? Yeah, it's great. I enjoyed it very much. Then I had lunch, and then here we are. We could figure out something to do. And I'll say this since Clance is leaving. But I'll tell you tonight, if you have not heard him before, and if you have, I know why you're here. I guess right now, living, he's done more for Alcoholics Anonymous than any other man. Sponsors more people, talks more places, and carries a message that I have everybody that I know and sponsor in my group. When they want, I let them listen to that tape so they'll know what alcoholism and AA is all about. So you're in for a treat tonight, and so am I, because I'm going to be here. And now we've got the crap out of the way, so thank you very much for inviting me, everybody, and... Lucille's here. Lucille's new. How many years? 40? 41. God, I can't believe it. She's not sure, so she's still hanging around. What's that new deal? Where you like sex all the time? What? Codependency. God, I wish I'd have thought of that. Damn. Think what the money you could have made out of that deal. Hell, you could all go on to work with me. And we could just send some of our folks over here to do this deal. Wouldn't even have to come. Wouldn't that have been wonderful? God, been wonderful. God, codependency. Here we are, right? I'm thinking about having a fast food deal. Like, say it, you're codependent on sex, which never was a problem with me, but with Sam, you know, a few of those people. Control. Just think, what about since I'm late getting in on it, what if I had something like a fast food deal, like a fast fix? Get fixed on the way home. Just a drive-through. You could get a chain of those working. And it wouldn't have to spend a lot of time. It'd be home in time for supper. Here we are, right? We go to Hazleton, tell them how we are. They write it down. Put it in a book. And sell it to us because we identify with it. Told my sponsor, I said, are we that sick? Yeah, we're that sick. Then that guy that wrote that stuff on that inner child crap, I knew that character, made a fortune. God, I was sitting right there with him. I had no idea he was just preparing himself to make his move. Took little something and made a fortune out of it. God, I was right there with him. What he told me, he does not remember today because he quit it and went into that deal. You know who the little child is, don't you? You're it. Everything, you know, hell, the Pharisees, everybody I'm getting in that other guy's deal, race. Everybody took the stuff that God gave them and made money out of it. Isn't that ridiculous? Of course, it doesn't work, but by God, they do it. Make a ton of money out of it. But that's ridiculous. And then this other deal, we got a bunch of deals going. God, we got deals going. Where do they get their subjects from? They can't get civilians. They won't fall for it. They've got to get some sick son of a bitches like you and me. Or they'll have no meeting. Yeah, I'll go for it. Why? Well, I'm in the place that'll give me everything, but I'd rather go with you and I can get that later. That's us. God, can't believe it. Now it's the parents that did it. Are you one of those? Your parents raised you to be an alcoholic? Oh, you know what my grandmother say about that? If I told her that, she'd say, you ought to be ashamed. And I'm going to tell you something. When she said ashamed, you're ashamed, brother. She had two words that'll get you. You ought to be ashamed and sorry. Drunks, sorry. God. Well, I was raised in a little town out there in northwest Texas where they didn't believe in doing anything. They didn't drink and wouldn't allow you to sell it or buy it. And a lot of counties in Texas are dry, which means we don't do nothing. And, of course, I was raised a Baptist, which we couldn't dance because you hold women. So, in fact, they wouldn't even have had children if they'd have known you could have mailed it. But I was raised in a little church. And this guy stands up there just like me, says, if you think it, you might as well have done it. Hell, I knew I must be thinking it, and I didn't even know what it was, but I knew I bet I was thinking it. And I was raised to be not an alcoholic, but a Southern Baptist. We're the ones that pray for the Catholics. Because they drink, you know. Episcopalians, they just got tired of being Catholic. And the Methodists, like Ray, they just didn't like water. Presbyterians, they knew it was going to happen. I think I'd like to be a Lutheran. They believe in doing everything just a little bit. I was raised in this little old town and finally got to be 13, which you'll happen to you if you do what I was doing one day at a time. And then one day after school, I got in this car with this girl. We kind of drove out in the country a little bit. We got to messing around. I got those funny feelings. And I told them about it. They said, "We've been meaning to talk to you." I said, "I knew you had. You know we've been praying for you." "Oh, hell yeah, I know you've been praying for you." See, they see that gleam in your eye, and they say, "Oh, my God, just as soon as he thinks that he's going to do it, we've lost him. Mightn't like it." So they said, "You need to get saved." I said, "What from? Haven't done nothing." "Meet us before the funeral or service." So I met them that Sunday morning. We got in that room, got down on our knees, and they just prayed. Then when they got through, they got up and said, "Now, they sing that last stanza, you come down that aisle and you get saved." Well, I did. My throat hurt. It came down. It's kind of like an egg, except didn't give out any chips. They hug you and kiss you and tell you how great you are, and hell, you know you're not, but I liked it. Then they throw you in the tank, and the handkerchief leaks. You choke a little, but hell, you come out all right. Went to school the next day and saw that girl. Came right back. I said, "Well, going to have to do it again." Didn't take. They said, "No, you just don't do it." Well, they didn't know I didn't know how to don't do anything. I didn't know I didn't know how to don't do anything. I didn't know they could just say, "Don't do that." They didn't do it anymore. I said, "Well, how do you don't do it?" "Don't. Think about it." I said, "I wonder why I didn't think about that." I thought, "Well, it's only 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'll just go ahead and think about it the rest of the day. Then tomorrow when I get up, hell, I just won't think about it anymore." Got up the next day and thought about it more than I ever thought about it before in my life. I had no idea that I'm the kind of guy, when I start not to do something, I'm going to do it all the time. And when I start not to think about it, that's all I'm going to think about. I used to try to wake up real quick before I thought about it. I was already having trouble with kids I'd go with them places I didn't fit in, and I'd always get the girl I wanted, somebody else got her, and folks would say things like, "Jimmy would never want to do that." Yeah, I did too. Already done it once, getting ready to do it again. Their biggest deal was when they'd say, "Jimmy wouldn't be caught dead doing that." It's like, my God, what if he's caught dead doing that? Everything they knew I wanted to do, I didn't want to do it, and everything they knew that I didn't want to do, it's exactly what I wanted to do. But I finally got out of high school. I had to go to summer school to get out of high school. I wasn't like that girl this morning. I liked to never got out of high school. I don't think I was so dumb. I was just busy. You know, it's like the guy came by and said, "I spoke to you yesterday. You sit in the car and you didn't even speak to me." I said, "I was having a meeting." He said, "There wasn't anybody in there but you." I thought, "Well, how many do you need?" 30 miles away was a little town that was wild and wicked. I heard about it, had honky-tonks. It's old Bear. So we slipped over there, and my God, walked open the door of that honky-tonk. Me and this guy's one Saturday. That's before I knew you could do it during the week. So we slipped over there and opened the door of that honky-tonk, and my God, there was that deacon I'd seen all my life, with a warm girl in one hand and a cold beer in the other. I said, "My God, let's get out of here. He'll tell Jesus on us." And we didn't even get to do it. You know, if you get caught before you do it, you ought to forget it. This guy said, "Well, he can't tell anybody." I said, "Hey, you got a better shot with Jesus than we do." However, he was happier than I had ever seen him. And I liked the girl he's with on Saturday night a lot better than one he's with on Sunday morning. We drank 2 beers, didn't taste good, didn't feel good, and I was glad to get out of there, get away from him. Next morning, I wanted to go to Sunday school and church. First time in my life I wanted to go. I thought, maybe, I haven't noticed, you get old enough, he may not go anymore. You may not have to go. There he was, sad like he always was. Then I had my first spiritual awakening. I'd always thought that deacons were just sad. Now I know, hell, he's just tired. I was back over there one Saturday afternoon by myself. And, no, I went over there with this other guy one more time before I had courage to go by myself. And I went over there and we went to another joint. It's a big town, had two joints. And I learned how to do everything but commit adultery. I'd have done that, but I didn't know much about it. And you know how you are. Think about it all day long, drink a beer and forget it. Or if you do, you don't know where you did or not. Learned how to drink, didn't even know I knew how to drink. Just drink one beer right after the other. Get feeling's good, can't feel it all. Just start dancing, never danced before in life. Fell down on the dance floor, broke my nose, did it five times after I learned how to do it. Blacked out, waked up the next morning, threw up, just like I'd been doing it for years. This guy called, said, how do you feel? I said, God, I feel horrible. He said, oh, but you had a great time. And I said, oh, well. Then I knew how to have a good time. Just go out and get drunk, black out, wake up the next morning, throw up, then you know you had a good time. Did not know you drank it any other way. I thought people who didn't drink like I drink just didn't drink. Now they're putting umbrellas in them. Don't guess they want any rainwater to get in there. They were already putting fruit in drinks. Not mine, because too much acid is not good for you. One Saturday, I was over there by myself about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I was just walking because I didn't want to start drinking. I was going to put it off as long as I could. Walked by that post office, and there's a sign out there that said, we need you. And I went in there, and they did. They said, have you ever been to California? I said, no, I haven't been, but 30 miles away from home. We're going in the morning. Oh, what do I do? Sign right here. So I went on and told my folks I was going to California. They said, how are you going? You don't have any money? I said, going with the Air Force. They're leaving in the morning. Well, my folks looked at me funny, but they didn't talk me out of it either. Went back next day, went to San Antonio. Now, that outfit operated one day at a time. And they were a funny bunch. You get up in the middle of the night, make your bed real quick like somebody's coming. Never did. Hell, it's still dark and they want to go eat. My God, you can't eat that time of night, for God's sakes. Make you sick even if you hadn't been drunk the night before. Then they were always scared because they walked in groups. Whoever it was that running our outfit decided we should take a surprise trip, which means we're not going to tell you where we're going, so you can't tell anybody, nobody will know. Whoever it was decided we ought to go to China. We're in the Air Force, so we go to China by boat. I think they flew the Navy over and the Marines ran the boat. There's a lot of Chinese over there. They have a few hills and trees and some rice, but they mainly just make Chinese. They like it, and they're good at it, and they're not interested in doing anything else. They lose some, but they're making so damn many, it doesn't make any difference. Well, after you're over there about 3 weeks, you've seen all the Chinese that you'll ever need to see. So I told them I was ready to come back home. We stayed 2 years. And we came back by boat. My folks says, where are you going to school? I said, I'm not going to school. Hate school. Couldn't get out of school and went to school. Wouldn't be caught dead going to school. They said, if you don't have that piece of paper, you won't even be able to apply for a job, let alone get one. Every person coming out of the service is going to have that piece of paper. Well, I proved my folks wrong. I gutted that thing straight through 3.5 years, and I made sure that I didn't learn one single thing. I made sure that every course I was going to pass it before I took it, and that it wouldn't benefit a human being whatsoever. You know what I like about you and I? God, I love us. We'll go to any length, even if it destroys us, just to be right. A lot of people won't do that. A lot of people just say, well, I could be wrong about that. Not you and I. Only time you and I will ever use that statement is when we're damn sure we're right. Then we might say, well, I could be wrong about that. He's having some minor difficulties with women. If you put 10 pretty girls up there, I'll get the sick one every time. I don't know where I learned how to do that. I'd see some guys, they'd just go one girl one week, one girl next day. They'd go different girl every, see different girl same week. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to make sure that you have a pretty girl, and one you be in love with, and one you can take home and show your folks, for God's sakes. Must don't just go with any girl. Only thing wrong with being the way I was is when you're walking around in love with no girl. Take me about 2 months to find that precious sick little thing. Then we'd be so much in love in about 2 months, I'd almost have to quit work. And things would just deteriorate and narrow out. When I got to AA, I thought, God, this is the greatest place I have ever been. First time I'd ever been where they had the sick women grouped. And I like both kinds. I like the ones that got sick doing it and the ones that got sick watching him do it. Every place that I worked, they wanted me to come to work on Monday. I don't have flu on Thursday. Monday's my flu day. And for some reason, everybody seemed to think... Bye, Clancy. Everybody seemed to... He slipped out. I just wanted y'all to know he hasn't left. Just gone. Every place we worked seemed like they didn't do it right. And that's hard work, doing your job, trying to make sure that the thing doesn't fail. The company is depending on us to handle the situation, whatever it is. What's so funny about this deal is some of those places that fired me are still operating doing it wrong. Which probably means that most of us are too smart to be in business. Well, I finally got out of a job, and then I couldn't find one. Could not find a job. The way I'd look for jobs, I'd get up every morning, I'd throw up, and I'd spray. And then I'd go fill out one of those forms that ask you personal questions like, where have you worked the last 10 years? Well, it's none of their business. They even want to know where you lived. I like to move around some. Some of the people where I live like for me to move around some. How are you going to remember all those addresses and the zip code? Then you fill out the rest of those blanks, which is very difficult because you got to say, wonder what they'd want me to say. Well, you don't know them very well and willing to say anything. Then you have the interview and get out and just do that one day at a time. I finally saved this one place because I knew the guy that was there would help me get the job, and I knew they had an opening. I knew I'd get it. First thing, when I walked in there, that guy said, you don't want this job. I said, yeah, I want the job. I need this job, and I knew you were here, and I knew we'd be great to working with you. You don't want this job. Everybody knew what I didn't want and what I wanted. I also knew there's something about me he'd like to tell me, but he didn't know how to do it. I also knew that he's going to like it better when I left. So I went out and got drunk, waked up the next morning. I said, you know, I've been doing this about 10 days. I think I'll just take the day off. So I went out the golf course, day no leg, no piece of toast. Went around the beer joint where my last spiritual advisor worked. And he said, my God, you look horrible. I said, yeah, I think I'm coming down with something. He said, my God, man, drink this beer. I said, well, I'm Baptist. We don't drink before 10:30. It's only 9 o'clock. He said, drink the beer. I don't want anybody having DTs out here in the middle of the golf course. So I drank the beer and drank half of it. And here it comes back up. Sprayed the golf course with it. I don't mind spraying if I don't lose my concentration. You know, you start thinking about women or something, it gets your nose and burns. Then you got to drink the rest of the day just to kill the pain. And I knew how to meditate before I got here. I don't do it that deeply anymore. It's just when me, God, and the commode, and you say, oh, God, and it's stringy. Little after lunch talk. And you can't breathe because you get it back. And you don't know where the end is, so you don't know whether you're going or staying. It's amazing. In the hot summertime, well, you know what? Deep meditation is very tiring. And you're down there in the hot summertime, you lean over there, and it's always just as cool. I told that guy, I said, I think I better go home and lie down. I didn't get to use those vibrators in motels for 2 years after I was sober because I used to vibrate all by myself. And I like to live with myself. I was supposed to call on hospitals. I'd get up in the morning, get in the car, and say, God, I hate to go to that big old hospital, have a hard time finding a parking place. Then you got to take that kit, go through the lobby, and wind around through the basement. And you know that purchasing agent, he ain't going to buy anything anyway. Well, you don't even have to park. Just drive right on by. Wait till 10:30, then you got it. I just play with this every once in a while because I don't know what they're on. Did I screw it up? Y'all not even listening, are you? Flat caught him. I knew it'd catch him. And now I caught me. I don't know where I was. Anyway, so I went home and I got in the living room. And I decided, I was living in Houston then. I said, I think I'll commit suicide. Then those guys that didn't hire me will worry about it for the rest of their days. They'll see in the Houston Chronicle, Jimmy Williams commits suicide. And they'll never get over it. They'll worry about it for the rest of their days. But I didn't know how to do it. I see it on television now all the time. Suicide, call that number. They probably have pamphlets they mail you. Softer, easier ways. Join our group. We're losing some, but we're gaining all the time. I didn't like guns of a morning because I don't like noise of a morning. And they splatter all over everything. Razor blades were popular then, but I didn't know how to do it. What kind of razor blade do you use? Straight edge? Single edge? Double edge? You got two wrists, which one do you cut? Which way do you cut it? This way or that way? Nobody to call. I knew you couldn't do it in the living room. You get blood all over the carpet. I'm always thinking of others. So I went to the bathroom and got my razor blade and sat down on the throne. And I had sense enough to know, what if you cut the left wrist? Left side die, right side be alive. What if you backed out half dead and half alive? So I, pretty smart, I cut both wrists so I could bleed and die evenly. And I'm just sitting there listening to the drip, thinking about those guys are going to worry about it for the rest of their days. And the phone rang. And I thought, what if where I'm going, I'll always wonder who that was called? That'd be enough to run you crazy. So I put a Band-Aid on my wrist right quick. Answered the phone. It was the police. You know, police have been trained by ministers. They'll stop you about 3 o'clock in the morning and say, come go along with me. Never talked to one yet, didn't have a personality change. You'll say, man, I can't go. I'm supposed to be home 7 o'clock. It's 3 o'clock now. Then they say, get out of the car! By God, I'm not going to do it. Whew. Then they really go nuts. You have to pacify them, go along with them. This guy said, where were you last night? So I said, right here. And he said, no, you wasn't. He, I said, how do you know? And he said, we was there. Then I didn't want to talk to him anymore. I'd already learned, don't ever talk to anybody no more about where you've been than you do. I said, well, what do you want me to do? And he said, well, you can either stay right there and we'll come get you, or you can come down here. And I said, well, I'll just come down there. He said, well, oh, you better pick up an attorney on the way, brother, because you're in big trouble. Huh. I said, well, wait for me. It'll take me an extra 30 minutes, but I'm coming. God, I love to live with me. I can live a week in a half a day. I've had a hell of a day. Got up, threw up all over the golf course, came back, had an emergency meeting, committed suicide. Now I've got to call another meeting, and it's only 11 o'clock. Had $36 left, which is plenty at that time before inflation started a new career. I said, maybe the Lord is trying to tell me to leave Houston. Maybe I've been here long enough. So I thought, well, I'll just put all my clothes, clean clothes and dirty clothes and all together and a few sheets and quilts and stuff and just had enough room in there just for me and just everything was level except one piece of furniture. Had no lamp and a lampshade. I put that on top. Guess I was going to carry the light if I could find the plug. Mailed the key to the folks and got in the car and started out of Houston and stopped by and got me a pint of bourbon just in case. Waked up the next morning about 140 miles away in Brownwood with $7. So I wonder how my folks are getting along. Isn't that amazing? When you know it's time to call home? I call them collect so they know it was me. Now, I never shortchanged my folks. Always, they're not going to get their money back. So I always gave them my very finest story. In fact, I got to listen to it, and it was so horrible, hell, I cried with them. I thought, my God, if I'd known it was that bad, I'd left Houston 3 years earlier. And old John said, well, Jimmy's honest. Let him have 100. 107. Almost going to business. I knew I had to sweat that night out, and I knew I couldn't sleep, so I just went in that bedroom, locked that door, and just walked and walked and walked. Finally, daylight came. And I started out to leave, and there was my aunt standing there. And I said, there's one little thing I left out last night. When I was having all that trouble down there in Houston, I was drinking some. But I decided last night I shall never drink again as long as I live. You'll never have to worry about my ever being underfinanced ever again. In fact, you won't have to worry about me anymore. I'm turning over a new leaf. And my folks look at me like, blank. So I get in the car. Finally, after about a year, and AA went back up there. I said, do you remember that time? She said, which one? She said, well, I think I remember. When you drove off, I asked John, what do you think? And he said, he's 33. He'll never live till he's 35. Well, I've got no place to go. And I'm rich. I had remembered I helped a guy get a job down the Rio Grande Valley, and I heard they had palm trees down there, and it was a beautiful place. I'll just run right down there. Stopped right out of Fort Worth. It's only a 10-hour drive, I found out later. 10 and a half. And I stopped at a filling station that happened to sell beer. I said, how far is to Waco? And they said, 79 miles. I said, let me have 3. So I end up, and when I get down there, I call this guy, and he did not invite me to his house. He put me up in an old hotel that a drunk ran and made a deal with the station there to fix me up. And I never took my clothes out of the car. Stayed there 3 solid weeks. Every morning, get up, go down, get my shorts, socks, shirt, go up, take a shower, come back. Did that for 3 weeks because I knew I was leaving every day. They hired me. Now, they didn't hire me because they wanted me. The Rio Grande Valley, you know where that is? It's the end. They have a little creek. They change countries. Mexico starts. And if you really want to find your bottom, that's a good place. So after they hired me, every time that I would go to work, they always had somebody that was in my place. And I had to tell them, days after days after day, get rid of that guy. He's in my place. I'm supposed to be there. It took me 3 months to get into my place. And for some reason, I would just get drunk and not drunk when I was at a new job. And I'd learn, work 7 days a week, learn everything about it, get up into my place, and then I could settle down and drink. Also, I was also trying to think about my women's situation was getting to where I was going through awkward times. What I need to do is not be true to one woman at a time. I need to have a number one and a spare. That way, when they go to pot, I'll have the spare and I won't have to look for another one. And that's hard to do that when you're drinking. It's hard to court when you're drinking. You know, you'll call about 10 o'clock in the morning and say, if you're not doing anything, I'll pick you up about 7:30. Might be 4 or 5 days before you get by there. It's just hard to do that. And my weekends were like this. I'd work Monday through Saturday noon, jump in the car, run to the golf course, have a big lunch like a cheese cracker and a six-pack. Blackout, be in bed by 6:30, quarter to 7. Wake up, 10:30, quarter to 11, go down to my beer joint, close it at 1 o'clock, and then whoever my best friends were at the time, we'd just slip on over to Banner Morris. Spend the rest of the evening. When daylight came, we'd have a little Wavis Rancheras and throw it up, or sometimes we skipped it. Just drink a little beer Sunday and work into Monday, and sometimes I made it, sometimes I missed it. This particular weekend, I was going to be off, so on Saturday. So I went over to number one's house, and I was blacking out around 11. And sometimes I think we're too honest for folks. They just can't handle it when it's just right there. So around 11 o'clock, I said, I think I'll go by and see number two. And evidently she had not heard about number two. And she wanted to discuss it, and I said, I've got to go to the bathroom, and she followed me in there. No patience or anything. I don't remember what happened, but I'm living in an old faded green trailer in an alley behind a motel. I had the rock yards early in life, long before they started putting them in. I used to see the weeds come up there, and I'd say, you'll never make it. And I've already learned how to wake up in total fright in my own bed, let alone somebody else's. So I'm there asleep, and something goes wham! God, jumped up, looked down, still had my clothes on. I said, oh, my God, I bet I was going somewhere early this morning. Looked down that old white shirt and had blood on it. Blood makes me sick, you know. That guy kept beating on that door, and I said, uh-oh, I had four knots on my head. Four, that big. All knots. My head, forehead is all knots. I wrecked my car. That's what it is. I have wrecked my car. That's the police. And those trailers, one door, windows like you can't get out. No way to get out. One way out. Finally opened the door, and it's that 6'4", 240-pound Baptist preacher said, come go along with me. I said, preacher, I know it looks like I'm ready, but I'm not ready. I don't know where the meeting is, but I can't make it. I don't know where it is, but today I can't go. I cannot go. He said, get in the car. God. Talk to you like a dog, you know, preacher. And I said, I'm going to have beer, preacher. I'm going to have beer. And he said, there'll be no drinking for the meeting. And he drives off. And I said, preacher, I'm not breathing. I'm not breathing. Preacher, I am not breathing. I'm not breathing. I've got to have a beer. You got to stop the car. I've got to have a beer. You know, Baptist preachers don't give a damn whether you're breathing or not. Drove up in front of her house. It looked like she might have fallen in a bush or something. My head is killing me. So I said, I'm going to the bathroom. I went in there and looked in that mirror, and I'm going to tell you something. She won. I'll never know exactly what happened, but I think probably I lost my equilibrium, fell in that bathtub, and she stomped me. 2 weeks later, we got married. We got married in the Baptist church so it would work. We got married at 10 o'clock in the morning so there'd be no drinking before the funeral or ceremony. I told her since she had been married before and I was pure that it wouldn't be necessary for us to invite a lot of people, but she could invite a few of her close friends. And then I'm blacking out around 11 o'clock again, so I start calling my friends. And they said I quit around 3. And when I get to the church, she's already there. My best beer distributor, golfing friend, came out of there and said, wait a minute. You called me at 3:15 this morning. We're not here to see you get married. We're here because we don't believe it. Now, I'm going to tell you something. As your best friend, the longest bet on your marriage is 3 weeks. But I showed them. I hung it in there for 8 years. But my life changed. I had no idea how nice it was to get up and throw up in peace. I used to grab that coffee. I was always going to quit smoking because it made me gag in the morning. Grab those cigarettes, grab that coffee, and go in that bathroom, lock that door, and she'd tell me what I was through that door. And I'd have to get upset, go make the living, get mad, drunk, and come home and tell her what she was. And we did that one day at a time. I finally went back to that preacher, and I said, preacher, this thing is not working. He said, you know what's wrong with you? You're missing the beauty of life. I said, yeah. Did you know the fruit trees are in bloom? I said, no. He said, what you need to do is go home and get your wife. Get in the car and drive up the valley and smell the aroma and look at the blossoms. I said, yeah. Went by, opened the door, said, get in the car. She said, what for? I said, we're going to go look at the blossoms. She said, the blossoms? I said, yeah, we're missing the whole damn thing. Went by, got a six-pack of beer, and started up the valley. Saw a sign that said 14 miles to Battamarsh, turned left, went to Battamarsh, switched to tequila, blacked out, missed the whole damn thing. Lost that job, could not find one, went all over the country looking for a job, and could not find one. And after about 2.5 months, this guy, if there was another drunk that drank just like I did, it was this guy. When he and I drank and were together, we were practically identical. And he managed a drug company. He said, how would you like to go to work for me? I said, well, I don't know. Well, why don't you come down? We'll check it. So we went down, had a beer at 10:30 instead of breakfast. Ended up down Padre Island, decided to take a little boat ride about 8:30 that night, had a boat wreck. 3 weeks later, I got out of the hospital, I got the job. Took him about 6 weeks to ship me to Fort Stockton, Texas. That's West Texas. Got little trees out there about that high. You can see California on a clear day. 536 people lived there. 36 of them were making a living. I joined the 500. Supposed to hold a pad like that with lines on it. Write stuff like the pharmacist calls it out. You just write it down. Oreomycin, and I never could get it. I couldn't get it in between the lines. He said, "My God, you look like you're going to fly apart." I said, "Any minute." He said, "Well, take some of these." This was not drugs. It was just Librium, for God's sake. little bitty. You know, not that big. Two-tone green or black or two-tone green. It's just all it was. It wasn't nothing to them. I took two of them, waited 15 or 20 seconds, not a damn thing happened. I'm used to something moving or doing something. It didn't, nothing happened. I took three more. Then my knees just went, "Huh?" I said, "God, I know how to weave. Now I've got to learn new stance." So I took Librium daytime, drank beer at night. Had one decision to make every night. After the third beer, never before or never later, I'd say, "Well, am I going to close the joint or am I going home early?" If I'm going home early, I go get a pint of bourbon, put it on top of that Librium and three beers, and go home like you're supposed to go home, blacked out. My ideal evening is when I blacked out right at the door. Sometimes I'd do it a little early, and sometimes I'd have to have one more drink. But I was always right there. Good blackout driver. Never had a wreck blacked out. Bad drunk driver. I have shown the court what stage of drunkenness I'm in. And sometimes I could hit stuff that's not even moving. Ended up getting a job back in Houston for no reason at all. Did not qualify for this job whatsoever. Should not have been hired. They didn't want to hire me or know why they should, but didn't know why they shouldn't. And I ended up back in Houston. And, what's-her-name and I had finally developed such a nice, sweet, deep hate for one another that we were really safe because the one that died first won. But it was best we have a two-bedroom because sleeping in the same area might not be safe. So we set up battle. That was March the 1st of 1965, and my new customers never saw me drunk. I'd always leave them if I played golf with them or something, and I'd go to the beer joint, get drunk, come home, black out. The day before Christmas Eve 1965, I played golf with these administrators and the in-laws, and I got too little hospitable, and they wanted me to go by and meet all the women, and I blacked out right at the door. Don't remember it. Drove from one side of the Houston to the other, blacked out. That's no different for me. Nothing any different. I'm a blackout guy, nothing new, except when I'd go to somebody's house. I'd always call back the next morning and say, "Sure am sorry about last night." Hell, I'm not sorry about last night. Want them to tell me what I did. They never tell you. They would just say, "It's okay, Jim, you just got drunk." Drunk was getting to be a bad word for me. Nobody called me an alcoholic, called me a drunk. And I'd have two or three of my friends say, "We can't have you over the house anymore, Jim, I love you. But we can't have you over because you're drunk." And the only drunk that I knew was a drunk in Troy, Texas, old Bratch, who slept downtown and always drank wine. And that was the only drunk that I knew. And that word got me here today. After that time, I got up that morning, what's-her-name had gone next door. I called back and they said the same thing. Check my car, make sure it didn't have any new dents in it. And I looked, she went next door, was getting ready to have a Christmas Eve party. And I looked in the phone book under Alcoholics Anonymous and called Intergroup. Guess heard on radio. And the girl acted like she's glad I called. I should have known then I had the wrong number. She said, "Somebody read right out." Well, hell, I waited. So he came by himself, had a book under his arm. I looked out the window. I said, "Oh, my God. We're going to read that book. Pray." I've not only been baptized, I've been rededicated 10 times. I said, "I'll just get rid of it." He came in. We didn't read the book. We didn't pray. I don't know what he said or what I said. And about that time, old what's-her-name came back in. He said, "You want to go with me?" Well, I didn't, but it's better to stay with her. Got in the car with him and hit that old 610 loop. And I said, "Oh, my God, I've gone off with a perfect stranger, for God's sakes. He's not my kind of guy. I can tell it already. I'll buy a beer." "I don't want a beer." "God, I knew it. I said, "Listen, I'm going to tell you something. I got bad drunk last night, and I've got to have a beer. I've got to have one. I'm going to tell you something. Either let me off, and I'll walk over there to that 7-Eleven, or by God,
Take me over there. I have got to have a beer. I got to have one right. Besides that, it's 11:20. He said, can you wait till we get to the club? Oh, yeah, I can do that. I can handle cold fright if I got a little light. So we drove over kind of a bad neighborhood. Drove up in front of this old rickety-looking house. I said, my God, is this it? He said, yeah. I thought, well, when I get some money, I'll help these folks. Walked in there, and some of the deacons were sitting over there talking about women in the stock market, and I found out later on they didn't know anything about either one. Walked back in the back, and the old bar had linoleum on it that had holes in it, and the bartender, he didn't look a hell of a lot better than I did. Program of attraction, you know. And this little deacon said, mix him up a little milk and honey. I said, my God, what do you put in it? I never drank anything like that in my life. He said, well, you see, you're nervous. I said, hell, that's what I've been trying to tell you. And besides all that, you're used to sugar in your system from alcohol. And the honey has already been digested. I said, indigestion's not my problem. You throw up right, you don't have indigestion. I drank half of it, and it curdled, came right back up. He said, don't worry about it. Well, plenty. Thought, hell, I'm going to put on a show for these guys. One of the smart ones said, walk all you want to. Hell, I didn't want to walk at all. They just sit there and talk and laugh, said, I've got a new animal in here today. Drinking that sweet, sweet, sweet. God, I hadn't had a piece of chocolate pie in 10 years. God, I can almost taste it now. Sick sweet. About 4:30, he said, time for us to go. I said, yeah. Let me out a couple of blocks before I get to the apartment. I knew I had to go in there and slip and get my car and slip out of there and go get me some bourbon because beer would not cut that sweet taste. He said, don't drink anything. I'm going to pick you up in an hour and a half. I said, what for? We're going to a meeting. I said, where? Right back where we came from. My God, we were there all day. I said, well, let me out. And I walked and walked, and here he comes, and back over there. It was kind of a funny bunch. I saw a few of them kind of laughing and hugging. The rest of them, they didn't act like they was too happy to be there either. Said a little old funny prayer. And then some guy got up, talked an hour and a half, 2 hours. They just laughed. Wasn't a damn thing funny. They said it's only 30 minutes, and I know it's long enough. Then some gal got up, talked 2 or 3 hours. They just laughed. I said, I'm going to tell you something. This is a sick bunch of people. And then they all got up and held hands and said the Lord's Prayer, for God's sakes. All of a sudden, when they said, amen, my God, the Holy Spirit moved in there. They all started talking at the same time, nobody listened. I said, I wonder how in the hell he did that. He didn't lay any hands on them. He didn't do nothing. Didn't have them down at the altar. Didn't sing any songs. I said, God, I'm going to keep my eyes open tomorrow night and see what he did. Then me and the deacon are standing back there in the back. Nobody speaking to us, and about that time I see the deal. Men and women getting together, holding hands, laughing, talking, taking off. I said, uh-oh. After you're here a little while, get to go to one of those apartments and have a little drink and talk about this damn thing. We went night after night after night after night, and nobody invited us anywhere. Well, it doesn't rain in Houston, just falls out. So we just fall out. And the phone rang. He said, I'll pick you up in 30 minutes. I said, it's raining. Did you ever go get a drink when it's raining? I'll be ready. And one old weekend, had gone back to the valley, see if we had any friends left. So I just went home and locked the door and pulled down the shades and turned off all the lights, had nothing on but the TV set. That old phone just ring, 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 let it ring. Next morning he called and said, where were you last night? I said, I was right here watching television, enjoyed every damn minute of it, and I may do it again tonight. He said, well, you missed it. I said, what did I miss? He said, I don't know. I said, wasn't you there? He said, yeah, but I only heard what I was supposed to hear. We'll never know what it was you were supposed to hear. I thought, my God, you've got to go every night. You'll miss it. Went every night, 3 months got drunk. Every night, 3 months got drunk. Every night, 3 months got drunk. And then I sobered up all by myself. And then I decided, you know, I have heard that I probably was just one of those heavy drinkers. You can't make an alcoholic out of a person that's not an alcoholic. I'm probably not an alcoholic. I've probably just always been underfinanced. And if I could get properly financed, I could tell them all to take it and shove it and I'm gone. But I knew first things first, you got to go back and officially resign and tell them, thank you very much, but I'm gone. Well, the meeting already starts off, so sitting through one more won't make any difference. Then here he comes, right at me. Evidently, I'd called him around 2:30 one morning while drinking. I doubt it very seriously. I think he'll tell you any damn thing, whatever fits the picture. And he walked up to me and said, don't you ever call me again. I said, God, I'm glad you said that. I never called you in the first place. They calls you. And I want to tell you something your best friends will not tell you. Nobody likes you here. We don't get invited anywhere, and they don't know me, so it's got to be you. And I'm going to tell you another thing. If I had as bad a personality as you do, I'd go back to drinking. And you don't ever have to worry about my calling you ever, ever again. If you're the last man on earth, you'll never hear from me again, brother. So look at me now, because I'm gone. And he didn't, till next morning. And he said, meet me at the club. And I walked in. He said, get your coffee and sit down. They talk to you like a dog here, you know. So I'm going to tell you something about Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, Al-Teen, Al-Top, and Al-Dog. There's absolutely no failure here. Never has, never will, impossible to, and cannot. There's no failure here. Never has, never will. Provided you do exactly like we tell you to do, the way we tell you to do it. So now there's only going to be one thing that you're going to get to do for the rest of your days. You're the only one that's going to get to do it. The only thing that you're going to get to do is you're going to get up every morning and decide whether you're going to go your way of life or our way of life. If you don't give an alcoholic a decision to make, they'll flounder on the same subject for years. So we're going to give you a decision to make this morning. You're either going to go your way of life or right back out that door. Or go our way of life. I said, I don't want to do either one. He said, I didn't ask you what you were going to do. I don't ask you what you want to do. I ask you what you're going to do. I said, well, I don't want to do either one. He said, damn it. What are you going to do? I'll tell you what. If you'll tell them that I don't want to do it, I'll do it. He said, well, there's a few things we've got to get clear. We have got to get clear a few things. First of all, it's your thinking that's wrong. I said, how much of my thinking's wrong? We always start with all of it, and if there's any good, we'll let you know. I said, well, you put a sign up there on the wall that says, think, 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 and he said, that's for us. So now we're going to give you some things not to do and some things to do. The thing's going to give you not to do is going to add... The thing's going to give you not to do... is going to change. The thing you're going to give you to do, you'll just add to. Then it's going to happen over here. I said, what the hell is going to happen over there? We don't know, but it always happens. I said, I'm going to tell you something. I've been listening to you and listening to you and listening to you, and you never listen to me. I want to tell you, I want you to hear me. I've heard every word you said, and I do not understand. He said, and that's it, and don't you ever forget it. He said, there's two things that you must remember for the rest of your days. One of them is, no matter what's going on in your life, you do not understand. Then you'll have understanding. And when you quit trying to understand, then you can enjoy it. And the other thing is, no matter what the situation is, it's never the situation. It's never you, never them. It's never her. It's never God. It's you that must become different. You must become different than you have ever been before. I said, how do I do that? He said, oh, you can't. I said, what the hell you tell me for then? He said, that's what's going to happen to you. He said, now I'm going to give you the kicker. This is the very one thing that got you here, but also is the very one thing that should it not change, it'll keep you from getting all the things that God has for His children. As long as you know that you know, you'll never know. But when you begin to do what we tell you not to do and to do and begin to know that you don't know, then you'll begin to know. I said, hell, you're crazy. He said, I know. He says, now, the first thing we're going to do, we're going to learn how to not drink or take a pill. You know that card that I gave you that has my number? For the men, no women on mine. When you get squirrely, definitely, before you take a drink or a pill, no matter what time of day or night it is, call one of those numbers. If you don't make the phone call, then do it. You've got to make the phone call. That's what we're going to do every day. First thing when you get up, get down on your knees and say these words and these words only. God, take me today. Let thy will only be done in my life. Take me and do with me as you see fit. Help me to definitely not take a drink of anything alcoholic or a mind-changing drug. Amen. Do not need to tell God what he has not done, nor what he needs to do. God can handle that all by himself. And then call me before you go to the bathroom. Why before I go to the bathroom? You may not need to go. Said, do you mean to tell me that you don't think that I've got sense enough to know when I need to go to the bathroom? He said, we'll find out. They don't give you a lot of credit here, you know. Before I got out on my knees, I said, God, you and I know he don't know. I've been praying to you all my life. And we're going to do everything. He's a Presbyterian, for God's sakes. But we're going to do everything this time just like he says. So when we get enough this time, we can then take it, shove it, we're gone. Got out on my knees and said that little old prayer, made sure I need to go to the bathroom, picked up the phone. He didn't even ask where I needed to go. And I said, go to the bathroom, meet me at the club. I met him at the club. He said, now go to work. I said, I hate my job. He said, what's that got to do with it? I said, well, I hated it so much yesterday, I couldn't go to work. He said, what'd you do, sit in that chair and think? I said, well, till noon, then went to the club. He said, you don't know how to go to work. I said, how? He said, go get in the car. If you'll write that down, we'll catch it. Then he said, later on, we'll learn how to do it more. But right now, besides that little prayer you say every morning, when you get in the car, invite God in the day. I said, how do you do that? He said, you say, God, I invite you in today. Put that on the card. Then you got to go to work, which I think is bad for alcoholics. Then you have to come back, come to the AA club, walk in, and they'll say out loud, because here comes the idiot that doesn't have sense enough to do anything, get your coffee and sit with us. Hell, I know to get my coffee and sit down there. Right? Then they start to talk, and you're supposed to listen only to them. And then when you almost get comfortable, it says, time for you to go home and eat supper and come back to the meeting. Hell, I know to go home and eat supper and come back to the damn meeting. Came back, and after the meeting, he says, now go home and thank God for the day. I do not thank God for the day. Been a miserable damn day. Hate you, hate God, hate AA, hate her, and I'm not going to be a hypocrite. He said, do you feel like when you talk to God that you don't mean it? I said, that's right, and by God, I'm not going to do it. He said, that has absolutely nothing to do with it. It's the action that you're taking that you don't know you're taking that's going to cause all the things to happen that you had no idea was going to happen. And when all those things that you do after you took the action you didn't know you were taking, and all those things that are going to happen that you had no idea was going to happen, all the things that you think have to happen will never need to happen. Well, hell, I understood that for God's sake. I said, well, you mean to tell me that God does not care, the group doesn't care, and you don't care when I pray to God whether I mean it or not? He said, not a bit. God is not going to depend on you for your relationship with him. He's going to handle that all by himself. I just got in my car, went home, went in there and shut the door, so what's your name, number one, couldn't get in there. Got down on my knees, said, okay, by God, God, thank you for a miserable damn day. Amen. Hell, if he don't care, hell, I don't care, and the group don't care. God don't care. Who in the hell cares? Did that for about 2 months, and I hit that one morning, didn't do anything any different this day than the other day. Hit that old 610 loop down there. One morning about 9:15, and this guy that I'd never known as my friend moved into that car with me. And for the first time in my life, I knew. God is my friend. And I knew that I'd never need to take another drink or a mind-changing drug as long as I live, unless I myself insisted upon it. And I knew it. God stayed with me all that day. I thought, man, the rest of my life's going to be just like this. About 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I thought, hell, I want to get me some tambourines and a tent. I'm going to go save some souls. Oral better look out because Jimmy's coming. Couldn't wait for him to get back to the club. He's 10 minutes late, walks through that door and says, get your coffee and sit down. The Baptist is taking over. I knew this was going to make me the leader. Well, he didn't like it. They don't like it coming back at him. They just like to tell you. They don't like it coming back. Well, he got his coffee, and I took him in the next room, and I stood up there right so he could see me, and I stood right there, looked down on him, told him the deal. And I waited for him to make me the leader. And I was going to tell him, and I might even let him go along and put up the tent. And he grinned just a little and said, thank God we've got that over with. Now we can get started. I said, my God, that took a year. He said, some are sicker than others. I said, what are you going to do about old what's-her-name? He said, oh, I don't know anything about that. My wife and I left our marriage right here. I'll send you to a guy who's got his all worked out. He sent me to an Episcopalian. You know they don't know. This guy said, are you married? I said, not really. I am legally, but I said, I've been praying for somebody to sleep with it. Nobody will. And there's a girl I know, it's the Lord has sent just for me. Been sober almost a month. But they won't let me go with her. He says, do you remember when you got an AA and you didn't fit in here and you didn't fit back out there? I said, yeah. He said, if you're willing to go through those lonesome periods in every area of your life, I'll not only guarantee a relationship with a woman, I'll guarantee a relationship with men and women that you never could have dreamed of. And I'll guarantee your relationship with God that you could not have imagined. I said, I don't believe that. He said, isn't that wonderful? I said, what do you mean? You don't need to. I said, why? It's the action. I said, oh, I've heard that. He said, we'll practice on her. God. He said, never tell her what's wrong with her ever again. I said, who's going to tell her? He said, I don't know, but you're not. And you're never going to do anything to work her around with the children or friends or Al-Anon or anything to get her to do what you want her to do. I said, never. And he said, never. And you're going to pray for her. And I said, I'm not. He said, yes, you are, and this prayer I'm going to give you, you're going to use it on many different people for the rest of your life. But we're going to start with her. God, thy will be done for her as well as for me. Take our relationship, let it be what you want it to be, and show me the truth. I said, I do not want God's will to be done for her as well as for me. He said, remember, what you want has nothing to do with it. I started doing that. And finally I went to him and I said, you ought to take her to Al-Anon. Al-Anon. Y'all are here. I want you to know I love you. Call me anytime I can do anything for you. Anyway, she found you depressing. And the more she went to you, the more she found you depressing. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it. When I did all that praying and everything, and what I was praying for, I finally learned that whatever's going on is never what's going on. And there I was, that old sex, love, lust thing surfaced in me, and I had it and couldn't get rid of it, and I told my sponsor 4 or 5 times a day, could still not get rid of it. And finally I told the group. And the girl in the group told him, said, you're not supposed to say that group. So I went over and told another group. One of them snitched on me. You know, we don't gossip here, we're just concerned. Then my sponsor came to me and said, we have heard all about that thing that you've got. We're sick of it. Usually when you stop acting on a defect of character, God transforms that, removes it from you, transforms your mind, but it's not happening to you. For some reason, you must go to have to do something different with that one thing. Oh, what's your name going back to the valley? You get over and lock yourself in that apartment. Don't you call me. Don't you call anybody. They can never make up their mind. One time it's call them all the time. Now it's don't call them at all. And you and God have got to do something about that. Well, I stayed in there, I prayed all day long, cried and cussed and did everything else. Finally, about 11, 12 o'clock at night, I went to sleep. Next day, that thing was gone. I thought, hell, they're so smart, I won't even tell them. Well, after about the fourth night, we were sitting at the ice cream place around the table, and I said, Well, I guess I might as well tell y'all. They said, we knew it the first night. I said, why didn't you tell me? Well, you need to know that you're going to always be the last to know. I says, why is that? He said, we don't know. So I end up getting a divorce after after we had nothing. You don't want to get sick? Make something out of nothing. And then I married me a Southern Sunday school teaching, singing in the choir Baptist. Guess how that worked? Didn't work. And now I've got one that I'll guarantee you that I knew would not work. She's younger than I am, and my aunt says so is most other women. So I knew she's too young, so that eliminated her right there. She's Catholic. I'm a Southern Baptist, for God's sakes. Catholic are just... My grandmother used to say, Catholic. Oh, well, that was it. She's a Yankee. And she goes down now. That could be in our favor. Had the best 5 years I've ever had in my life. The freest God-given relationship I've ever had. And I'm grateful to you that I knew how to do and not do so it could be done. Very difficult thing, isn't it? Don't have what you want and do it. If you don't want it and get to where you can't have it, then you can get it. If you'll leave it alone and make sure you had nothing to do with it. If you keep trying to have it, you'll never have it. There's nobody living that I know of that has been chosen and given the privilege that's been given to us. Nobody. I don't know anybody or any walk of life of anybody that's been given the privilege, the special privilege, that's specially been singled out like we have. I don't know anybody would go through what it takes to be prepared to be singled out, to have the privilege of being as special as you and I are. Everything I did and everything you did was exactly what Almighty God wanted done. You did exactly up to this minute what He wanted done. He probably chose us before we were born. I don't know when, but I know He did. And I know He took care of you and me. We did everything we could to destroy ourselves and anybody to go with us, and we couldn't do it. Why? Because God had us in the palm of His hand all that time. Didn't matter what you did and how you did it, you weren't going to make it. And we did everything we were supposed to do. Give it everything you've got and fail. That's it. Become what the old Baptist used to tell me. We're nothing but filthy rags. We're only what He is with us. The difference in you and I, we became and experienced being filthy rags. And that's where God's kids have got to go. You and I went to where we needed to go. You and I can't believe still that God chose us. He chose us. That He's going to depend on us to carry the message that He has. He wrote a book just for us. Nobody else. Won't work for anybody else. Just for us. He said, I'll prepare a place for you. Was it ready when you got here? Yep, there it was. Hell, it was there. He said, did you fit in the world? No, gave it everything could. Tried to. Well, you wasn't supposed to. God's children will not be allowed to fit in the world. God's children are not allowed to have anything the worldly way. God's children who completely continue to try to have their way will never know God's way. He said, I will prepare a place for you, which He did, and you are not to fit in this world. You are to live in My kingdom. That I create. Here it is. Do we fit in the world? Nope. Not supposed to. Isn't that great? Hell with them. We got the edge. We've got the edge. You and I have got the edge. Everywhere I go today, I've got the edge. God lives within me and you. We've got the edge. As long as we don't try to do it ourselves, we've got the edge. If I'll go to the place, if I'll live to that place through every situation, there's no reason for a situation to ever happen to me, except for one thing. The privilege of living through that situation with God coming into me and my being with you to let Him handle that situation. That's the privilege He's given to me. And He chose me. And He chose you. AA Al-Anon Alateen. That's it. Cut it off right there. He chose us. Gave us the book. That as long as you and I call one another, as long as you and I meet together, He's going to take us. And He brought us from every walk of life, even the preachers. Hadn't seen the rabbi, but David Aronofsky is here. But He brought us from every walk of life. Priest, everywhere. Everybody got here. He didn't leave out one single one because He needed us to carry the message, the one message that God carries Himself. You need nothing else. He carried the message that He gives us to carry to ourselves while carrying it to each other. That you and I are being healed spiritually, mentally, physically, and emotionally. And as long as you and I stay together, we're going to have the spiritual healing. And as we do that, we're going to be taken care of physically, mentally, and emotionally. Our counselor, our therapist, is God Himself. We don't settle. Isn't that wonderful? You and I wouldn't settle for less. We do it a lot. But now that we're here, I can go for the very best life that's given only to God's people. And I'm in that kingdom today. And I live there today. And I love it. There's not any place in the world that I'd rather be than where I am this minute. Not any place that I'd rather be than being willing to call somebody or they call me and God come through the telephone like He always does. Or when I'm in one of my meetings or you're in yours or I'm with you, He never fails us. Thank God I stay with you long enough to feel Him loving me that day, me loving Him. I've had the finest, closest relationship with Almighty God these last 6 years that I ever dreamed possible. And looking forward to the next one. Because of you. You see, I could have gone to 10 different denominations and 1,000 different churches. My life was never to be any different until God sent me to be with you like He sent you to be with me. Thank God I stayed with you long enough. But the difference was you. It was you that I had to be with when God had me properly prepared to make the walk that He had for me and the one He had for you. And by doing all that, I got to live in and receive the one power that only God's children have. And that's the power that you and I live in today. And that's the power that does everything in an unlimited life for you and I. That one power that never fails and that I can feel right now. When I can feel you loving me and me loving you. Thank you very much.